numbers. We can't do without them. And sometimes we misuse the numbers, and that's what this week's After Dinner speaker, a mathematician from Victoria University, Dr. Dylan May, who was on to tackle. I think he's on a line from somewhere in Te Whanganui a Tara, a.k.a. Wellington. You there, Dylan?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Tēnā koe. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thanks. How about you?
I'm all right. The misuse of stats. Now, you want to revisit this topic, but why? Because Trump's no longer in the White House.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, the misuse of statistics has not gone away. It's been a conviction of mine for some time that if we want to help people navigate their way through this modern world, which is filled with so much information and so much misinformation and disinformation, then one of the best things we can do to help people is to give them an education in elementary statistics and probability. This has been a conviction of mine for some time. So I'm always on the lookout for cases where a knowledge of statistics and probability would help people avoid being misled by, you know, some inaccurate information. So I saw a couple of cases recently where that happened. And so I thought we could talk about that.
And these are to do with COVID-19, I'm guessing?
Yeah, that's right. So I recently saw a couple of articles. One was published on Slate.com, and that's by Gary Cornell, and another is written by Philip Bump in the Washington Post. Both of them are concerned with the use of statistics with reference to the COVID pandemic.
The first one is to do with... The first one is vaccination, isn't it? Because there have been a few stories kicking around of various places where vaccination rates are high, but there's also still COVID infection. And people who are vaccinated are still getting COVID-19. You were focusing on one in Singapore, weren't you?
Yeah. So there have been a few headlines which have attracted criticism by this, in particular in this article by Gary Cornell. But I was looking at a particular headline, which is about COVID cases in Singapore. The headline is from Reuters, the news agency, and the headline reads, "Vaccinated people make up 75% of recent COVID-19 cases in Singapore." Now, that's a bad headline. That's a badly written headline. The point of the headline should be to inform, and this headline does more to misinform than it does to inform.
Yeah, it seems to be saying, what's the point of getting vaxxed?
It does seem to be saying that. It does seem to be saying that there's not much point in getting vaccinated if vaccinated people make up 75% of recent infections. But that is the wrong conclusion to draw. It is a natural conclusion to draw from that headline, and that's why the headline is bad. You shouldn't draw that conclusion from the headline. And a little bit of elementary statistics and probability will help you to see what's actually going on in that headline.
Can I ask you then to explain the data that led to the headline and then how we should have used the data?
Sure. Okay. Well, the reason that this is a confusing headline is it because it invites people to confuse the probability of X given Y with the probability of Y given X. Now, that sounds technical, but I will explain it in more elementary terms. But this is one of the most common misunderstandings in the use of statistics. And this headline is inviting people to fall into that trap. Okay, so when I say the probability of X given Y, I mean something like the probability that somebody is vaccinated given that they have been infected with COVID. Okay, that probability means you select an infected person at random and you ask the question, what is the probability that they have been vaccinated? Okay, that is the probability of somebody being vaccinated given that they are infected. Now, okay, that's fine. That might be 75%, but that's not the probability you care about. It's not the probability of any of us really care about. The probability we care about is the probability that we will be infected given that we have been vaccinated. That's the one that should inform our decision-making. That's the probability that tells us whether vaccination is helping us.
Can I get around trying to explain this by imagining that Singapore is a village of 100 people.
Great.
All right, 100 people, 95 of those people are vaccinated. And then when we find there's an outbreak, 4 people are infected, 3 of those people are vaccinated. There's your 75%. Now tell me, I got the 75%, but that's wrong. Tell me what I should be getting you with that data that's more useful in order of working out the chances of getting sick with COVID-19 once I've been vaccinated.
Right. So we're in this imaginary situation where we have a population of 100 people, to keep the number simple, and 95% of them are vaccinated. Okay, now we have an outbreak. So 4 people have been infected with COVID. And let's say that 3 of those are vaccinated people, 1 of them is non-vaccinated. It is still true to say that 75% of the recent infections are vaccinated, right? That is a correct statistic. 3 out of the 4 infected people were vaccinated. Okay, so it's not incorrect, it's just not the useful statistic. That is the probability that an infected person was vaccinated. What we care about is the probability that a vaccinated person was infected. So let's think about that probability instead. Okay, well, how many vaccinated people have been infected? We said 3. Okay, what is the total number of vaccinated people? 95, we said, 95% of the entire population. So the probability that a vaccinated person is infected is actually not 3 out of 4, it's 3 out of 95. That's a much lower probability. It's only a little bit more than 3%. That's the probability that we should be caring about.
Okay, okay? And so looking at this in another direction, what about the chance of an unvaccinated person with that data there, this imaginary village of 100 people representing Singapore, what is the chance of an unvaccinated person getting sick with COVID-19?
Sure. So in this scenario, there are 5 unvaccinated people in this population, and 1 of them has been infected. So the probability of being infected, given that you are unvaccinated, is 1 in 5. That's 20%. That's a lot higher than the 3% rate we got for vaccinated people. I guess I should emphasize again that this is an imaginary scenario, but the sort of scenario that we are talking about is not all that far from reality. So if you look at that headline, that slightly worrying headline, vaccinated people make up 75% of recent COVID-19 cases, just remember that is not the probability that you really care about. The probability you should care about is the probability of being infected given that you have a vaccination, and that's a much lower probability.
Dylan, can you tell me what the base rate fallacy is?
Yeah, sure. So the base rate fallacy is related to the problem we have been talking about. So we have just been talking about the confusion between the probability of being infected given that you are vaccinated, which is the probability you care about, versus the probability of being vaccinated given that you have been infected. Okay, that's one confusion. A related confusion is the base rate fallacy. And it's pretty easy to illustrate what a base rate fallacy means. So I'll just say something to you and see how you react. So what if I say to you, 90% of recent COVID infections were amongst right-handed people? So what's your initial reaction when I say that?
Okay. Well, actually, I'm thinking
90% of infections. Got to be bad, right?
Yeah, I'm right-handed. But then aren't 90% of people... Hang on, Dylan. Aren't 90% of people right-handed anyway?
There you go. You just avoided the base rate fallacy by recognizing that I wasn't giving you enough information. So the base rate fallacy occurs when we don't think about the underlying rate of the population we are discussing. And that means the headline statistic becomes useless. Without that context, the statistic becomes useless. So when I say to you 90% of COVID infections are amongst right-handed people, your initial reaction might be, well, that's bad. That's got to be bad for right-handed people. But of course, the information that I just gave you is meaningless if I don't tell you what the underlying rate of right-handed people is. And of course, the underlying rate of right-handed people is about 90%. 90% of the population is right-handed. Now, so Dylan, you would ahead.
I was going to say, Dylan, there's another thing that, not so much now, but I've heard a fair bit in the debate over the need to do what we are doing around the world in various ways to slow the spread of this disease or vaccinate against it. And that is people arguing, look, the average age of death of somebody with COVID-19 in a particular jurisdiction might be 80 years. But the average life expectancy, in the same jurisdiction for say, a male, is 73. So why are we putting all these resources into stopping something that's less deadly on the face of it, on paper, than old age?
Yeah, it's an interesting argument, isn't it? So this is exactly the argument that was made by Tucker Carlson a little while ago. Tucker Carlson is one of the prime attractions at the Fox News Network. And Carlson was basically, he was examining the statistics from Ohio in America, and he was saying the median age of a person dying of COVID in Ohio is 80 years, whereas, in fact, the life expectancy in Ohio is 73. Okay, so there are a couple of weird things about this. The first is that it's kind of a weird argument on the human level. I mean, if an 80-year-old dies of COVID, is the first reaction to say, oh, well, they exceeded the life expectancy anyway, so no big deal?
Yeah. Anything that after 73 is a bonus. What are you complaining about?
I don't think that's how people work. I don't think that's how people react to their
grandmother. Not once they're over 73, no. Yeah. Is Tucker 73 or younger?
He's younger than that.
Yeah. I'm guessing he probably is.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a weird argument to make just on that human level. It's also a bad argument on a statistical level. And that's because what Carlson doesn't understand is that that life expectancy of 73 years is life expectancy at birth. Okay?
Does that mean, Dylan, that at the moment, if you were born today in Ohio, you're expected to live, if you're a male, I'm assuming it's male, maybe it's the expectancy for both genders. Right, okay, you're expected to live 73 years if you were born today.
Correct.
So what's the life expectancy for somebody who is, say, 73 right now in Ohio?
It's a lot higher than 73. Well, it's at least a bit higher than 73. The point is that once you get to that age, you can expect to live longer, right? You've already lived a whole lot of life. You can expect to keep on going. So the average life expectancy for a group of babies born today in Ohio, that's 73 years. So if you take 100 babies born in Ohio today, at the end of their lives, you'll find that their average lifespan was 73 years. But now imagine taking 100 older people in Ohio, 100 people who have already reached the age of 73. Okay, what do you expect their life expectancy to be? At the end of their lives, you calculate their average lifespan. It's obviously going to be more than 73 because they've already made it to 73. In fact, it looks like the life expectancy of people in their mid-70s in Ohio is actually about 87. So once you get to 73, you can expect to have another, 14 years of life. So if you die of COVID at the age of 80 in Ohio, it's robbed you, on average, of about 7 years of life.
What would be a more useful way, Dylan, of trying to work out the impact that the disease is having? When people say, well, it affects mostly people who are older. What about, I've heard some people talking about the number of deaths being greater than the average for what you'd expect for this particular time period. In the United States and Ohio, instead of last compared to the average for the month of June, there might be twice as many. Is that actually useful?
I think so. Because, well, okay, a caveat here, I'm not an epidemiologist, I'm not a mathematical modeler of diseases, but it's very striking to me, just as an armchair specialist who's following along with interest, it's very striking to me how the number of deaths has skyrocketed. And of course, that's useful for epidemiologists because not every person who dies of a disease will be recorded as dying of that disease. So the number of excess deaths may give you a truer picture of the impact that the disease is having. Here's another statistic that I found very striking also in this article in the Washington Post. So it seems as though in America alone, the number of but it looks as though this disease has had a toll of more than 1.2 million life years. Okay, so that means that 1.2 million years have been taken away from the people who died of the disease. That's in one country alone, obviously a large country, but still quite a striking statistic.
Dylan, it's always fascinating speaking with you. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Thank you very much.